Yes, thank you. Well, in the course of this workshop, I realized that many of the things I had prepared and wanted to say have already been said in one or the other way. So I'm more concentrating than I actually wanted on the, or planned initially on a current summary of alpha S measurements, but with some special emphasis on hadron colliders, and also give my personal point of view what should and what can be improved in the future. So just as a short introduction, I mean, which is basically everything is clear to everybody in the audience, but we can determine alpha S in all types of process where we have significant diagrams of this sort with the exchange or radiation of gluons. And that is, of course, E plus E minus annihilation, total hadronic cross-section, hadronic decay widths of Z and Z bosons and tau leptons, jet weights and event shapes as the most classical ones in E plus E minus annihilation. Then deep inelastic scattering, although there we have a rather large list by now of independent and overlapping determinations of alpha S from scaling violations of structure functions, sum rules, jet weights and event shapes similar to that of E plus E minus annihilation. Then, of course, hadron colliders, proton and antiproton collisions, or proton-proton collisions at the LHC, where basically jet weights so far have been studied photoproduction, inclusive production of B quarks, which gave significant results on alpha S. And then, of course, finally, heavy Kwakonia decays, where we also have a set of significant results by now. Well, just going back, I think we are working on alpha S determinations since QCD sort of has been invented about 30 years ago, and during the last 15 years many things have been changed. This is the status of just 15 years from now, which was summarized by Guido at that time. There was a small number of determinations of alpha S basically in two classes, namely in deep inelastic scattering and then a few at higher energies in E plus E minus annihilations at Petra and Pepper that days. Now, of course, if you erase in your mind these suggestive QCD curves, it was hard at that time to really say something convincing on the running of alpha S. It was compatible, but there was not a real big evidence for that. Now, about almost 15 years later, and this is the latest summary which I have published in September 2002, that's a bit more than a year ago, looks like this. And there you see now a large number of data entries, and even that is not the whole story, because most of these points stand for already a convolution of several analyses and papers. So the amount of work which is summarized here is quite impressive and amounts several hundreds of papers probably. Okay, the color code tells you at which processes these determinations have been done, notably the most entries because they stretch over the largest energy range from the very smallest Q values in the tau decays up to the different analysis in the E plus E minus collider lab up to more than 200 GeV. We have also, of course, deep inelastic scattering, and not all the results are plotted in this running plot because many results have been done in a span of energy, so it's difficult or not justifiable to put them at one particular energy. So I will show you another plot where they are all included. Now, the running of alpha S is convincingly seen. I will, if I have time at the end, give some more specifications to that. And if you see the value of alpha S expressed at the mass of the zero, that's about 0.118, 0.11, almost 0.112, and it has been fairly stable at this value, around this value, during the last few years. Now, you can't read all the details of that table, but this basically summarizes all the significant alpha S measurements published at different energies or energy ranges, where you see blank spaces here. Then if ranges of energy and data have been used, then everything is converted usually to alpha S at MZ0. You see all the results here with the errors broken up into experimental theoretical errors. And the last column gives you the degree, the precision of QCD, which has been used here. And you see that there's quite a number of analyses now where we have this next to leading order tag which is supposed to be much more precise if we have that in experimental determinations. Many of these things are next to leading order, but using resum next to leading order, which is already proved next to leading order calculations, and it is superior also in the error determinations in these cases. Now, if I take the same data and just show the plot, now everything converted to alpha is at MZ0. You see the same thing you saw on the table here now in a graph. And you see that the measurements quite nicely agree with each other. There is not one single measurement which really sticks out by more than 2 sigma from the world average, which I will explain at the end how to derive that, which is given here as this dashed line plus the yellow error band. Okay, but before I show some of the newest results and maybe most significant results, I just want to get the level of QCD calculations and the nomenclature right. So what I use in order to run alpha S values from one value of energy to another, basically to MZ0, using the running calculations, which are now complete up to the fourth order, which is quite a long formula, which one can use now, but it goes now to the fourth order. This is just to calculate, to extrapolate alpha S measured at one value of energy to the other. So these coefficients, I don't have to explain that here, I think do not, beta 0 and beta 1, the first two do not depend on the renormalization scale. Sorry? What is wrong? L cannot be what? Yeah, it's... No, the ln is always here. Yeah. L has this value. Is that true? Did I mess this up? I'm sorry about that. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's right. That's right. There's one log missing. Okay, I'm sorry. This was a test, okay. Okay, and the one more thing is that I choose the MS-bar scheme for all of the following discussion. Now, just to make visible the relative size of higher order corrections in this running alpha S expression, what I did here is showing the alpha S at the value of a certain energy scale for lambda MS bar of 220 MeV. And we have the one loop, the two loop, and then the three and four loop is a full line here, which would not give any visible difference anymore with this resolution. And in order to see better the relative difference, this is just the difference of an alpha S and N loop calculation divided by the most precise one we know with in full four loop. And then you see that, of course, in one loop, we have huge deviations, and this only reaches down to energies to 20 GeV. If you go to 1 GeV, it's a huge deviation. But already in second order, this comes down to quite tiny values, and third order is almost invisible differences to the for loop calculation. Another thing to worry about is the matching of the running alpha S at the different quark thresholds, because the number of flavors changes there in step function. And I use the three-loop condition, which has been published and done by Schitierkin, Kniel, and Steinhauser. For the four-loop alpha S, running alpha S, one needs the three-loop matching conditions, which according to these few equations which I give here, has been done using the pole masses of the heavy quarks, charm and bottom quarks. And if one does this again in four-loop, alpha S and three-loop matching. This would now, at very small Q squared, where you have one threshold here and another threshold you have here, you see in this plot almost by naked eye, you may have an indication that there's a little step. And if one does the unmatched calculation, then one gets all the smooth curve, but which starts to get deviations at the very small energies. And again here, showing the same data, same calculation, in this ratio plot, then here you see that you get a deviation of the unmatched calculation just drastically. You see that here, a few percent differences. So one has to do careful matching when comparing different alpha S results at various energies. Now, just one more word to, in general, to the perturbative predictions for physical quantities. In general, they are given in such a power sum, powers of alpha S plus some factors in front of alpha S, and due to the different degree of QCD in leading order, next to leading order, these coefficients will then be known from the calculations. Second thing which is used basically for many, many years now at LEP for the alpha S determination from event shapes and jet weights, where no next to leading order calculation is available, but it has been shown that the next to leading order together with the resummation of logs which arise from soft and collinear singularities according to this formalism can give a quite significant improve in the precision of the QCD predictions. Now, showing this in a table, then these lines would be the sum of the terms in these different columns gives the order alpha S prediction, the second line then plus the first one gives the order alpha S squared and so on, and the leading logs and the next two leading logs are then these columns, and sub-leading logs would be the next. And if one sums this all together, then one has to care, of course, about double counting in leading and next to leading log. One has to care about these few coefficients here, which are also present in the fixed order calculation. So if one wants to put together fixed order plus resummation, one has to do this matching. Different matching schemes are available to do a proper calculation, avoiding double counting or undercounting, whatever one has. And then the final word, something on the procedure and on calculating the uncertainties. That is the question of the renormalization scale dependence. Now, any physical observable can be expressed in this case, like an observable which depends on alpha S and also on the renormalization scale, where Q squared is the energy scale of the process. And alpha S then is also a function of this renormalization scale. Now, since the choice of the renormalization scale in the calculation is arbitrary, any physical observable R should not depend on the explicit choice of the renormalization scale. However, in finite order perturbation theory, there are dependencies, and those can be quantified coming from the non-dependence of on this renormalization scale. One can say that the derivative of any physical quantity at this renormalization scale should be zero, and that then if one calculates that gives this next equation, and in order that to be zero, order by order all these things in the brackets then must vanish, and from that one can give the renormalization scale dependence of these constants in the calculations. The leading and next to leading order constants are constant, so in order that these two expressions vanish, and then these brackets vanishing gives the conditions of the renormalization scale dependence of the higher order coefficients. Now, perturbative QCD coefficients beyond leading order become renormalization scale dependent, and this dependence then is usually used to quantify theoretical uncertainties due to the unknown and not calculated higher orders. All right, I give an example of how this works, and this is a very one of the most simple examples to determine precise values of alpha S, and that comes from the hadronic width of the C0 boson. Here's a plot of a summary of measurements of LEP and all kinds of E plus E minus experiments in the past, and you see this very prominent peak of the C0, and the hadronic width of that is very dependent on alpha S. Now, if we have a measurement and we don't take the absolute width, we just, any plus and minus are used to taking ratios. So we take R as the ratio of the hadronic over the leptonic width, and that has been measured very precisely to be that value. And also in QCD, that has been predicted very precisely in complete next to leading order. So we have the third power of alpha S coefficient here, which unfortunately has a rather large coefficient, but that's QCD. And if we take this measurement here, we can directly with a pocket calculator calculate alpha S. Now, then we have renormalization scale dependencies. Alpha S is renormalization scale dependent, and all of these two coefficients, which partly cancel the dependence of alpha s on mu. Now, if we go in leading order, which would take only the first two parts here, then there is nothing that cancels, because nothing that cancels the renormalization scale dependence of alpha s, because this coefficient does not depend on it. And so we have a very, almost a linear, in logarithmic terms, dependence of alpha s, the value of alpha s coming from this measurement. So that's not really a measurement in this case. So what we need is, of course, the next to leading order, then we have a kind of parabola form dependence of on the renormalization scale. And there are, of course, also procedures, which I don't want to go into details, proposals how to fix or to select the optimal renormalization scale in terms of physical arguments. These are these different symbols. This is Stevenson and Brodsky, and other people have, and Greenberg have proposed these procedures. Now, then if we go to the full next to leading order calculation, of course, the dependence gets smoother and smoother, at least around the physical scale of the center of mass energy, which is the one here. So we have this red curve, and we see if we define a certain region of renormalization scales in order to get the error or uncertainty calculation in QCD, this is much better defined in next to leading order. Now, we have, we could, of course, and that is usually done, the canonical choice is taking the renormalization scale to be equal to the center of mass energy in E plus E minus, so the physical energy scale. And then if we have our measurement here converted into this curve, we get the value of alpha s 0.124, something like that, here in this case. Now the question is how big should be the error which we assign to that, and the next to leading order, I think it's just prudent to take the reach between the minimum and the maximum of this curve, and that would give at least a good evaluation of the theoretical uncertainty according to unknown higher orders. Now, of course, there are also uncertainties coming from the electroweak calculations due to the unknown Higgs mass, and the uncertainties in the top mass gives a small uncertainty. The 0.004 is the experimental uncertainty, and the QCD uncertainty one can get from basically varying the renormalization scale here in the case I have, as I have shown here. Next to leading order, one should also worry about the renormalization scheme, which has been done by other people, and this is almost vanishing. So we get up, we end here in this case with a theoretical uncertainty which is smaller than the experimental uncertainty, and so the result here will be limited, unless we will build a linear collider, it will be limited to the existing statistics of the lab data. Okay, now let me go to deep inelastic scattering. Now, it's impossible to show all the determinations of alpha s, which are, even if it would be only those of the past few years. So I concentrate on those which at the end will go into the determination of the world average. And here for the value of alpha s coming from the structure function measurements, there the most precise determination comes from Santiago and Indurain. It's a paper from 2001. It has been debated quite a lot in many cases, because the error determination and the uncertainty determination does not seem to be really complete, in that there's no scale uncertainty in there, but other things which the two authors have looked at. Now, they use complete next to leading order calculations for the moments of structure functions. And then they use all available deep inelastic scattering data in this energy range and extract alpha s and next to leading order from F2 for EP scattering, and for XF3 from neutrino nucleon scattering. Now, this table of error calculations or uncertainty calculations is for the F2 case, and so they come out in the F2 case with a very precise determination of alpha s, very small statistical error, and a very, very small, even unusually small, even in next to leading order, which I, for the sake of counting or calculating something like a world average, and due to the fact that this list is by far not complete in uncertainties, I have agreed with the authors to multiply this by a factor of 2, just for the sake of getting an average with other experiments. Okay, a very recent one is an update on the global analysis of deep inelastic scattering and hadron collider data, which is done by Martin, Robert, Sterling, and Zorn. They have done then for the first time extracting something like an alpha S and all the structure functions in next to leading order, and they repeated also the analysis and fit of these structure functions in next to leading order. These are the values they get. In next to leading order, one usually observes a small drop, a decrease of alpha S, while the uncertainties, experimental ones, are the same, and apparently also the theoretical ones. One should note, however, that next to leading order QCD is not complete in the sense, or even for the deep inelastic scattering data, but it is completely absent for hadron collider jet production, which is a strong player in this fitting game. So I concluded that this is not a complete next to leading order analysis yet, but it's on the right path. In the updated papers of last year, the authors did not give these nice pictures of structure functions, so I took it from an older paper, and I think they must be similar. There's more data now, and there's better structure functions, but in principle, you see the amount of data which goes into these determinations of alpha. This is structure functions, and this is from jet production at the Hadron Collider. Okay, another recent determination of alpha S comes from HERA. There's a continuous flow of alpha S analysis from the HERA experiments over the years. This is one of the latest. This is the scaling violation, alpha S from scaling violations in jet production at HERA. And this is I'm always pressing the wrong knob. This is the actual measurement as a function of ET, inclusive jet production, and together with the next to leading and the leading order QCD prediction, and the next to leading order QCD prediction nicely describes the data. Okay, one can do this, one can do alpha S determination actually in each bin of this distribution, and this has been done for this plot. So these are the results of SUS for alpha S as a function of jet production at different ETs, taking ET as a physical energy observable, and if one averages everything together, one gets a fairly high value, actually, almost unusually high for deep inelastic scattering. It is systematically higher than the current world average, but not by a significant amount. Now, if one plots these alpha S's as a function of ET, one can see the alpha S running within one experiment, and one also sees that the two-loop fit, this top green area, just nicely describes the running of the data. So if one can, one can combine various determinations of alpha S from jet production from H1 and also from SUS, and doing that, I derived this combined value for several analyses which are available. Yeah, then switching to E plus E minus, there has been a reanalysis of data from a very ancient experiment, the Jade experiment at Petra, which is quite a long time ago. And the thing is that at that time, Petra was switched off in 86. And at that time, most of the relevant QCD calculations that we have them now, especially with resummation, were not done, were not available, and all of the nice hadronization models and QCD models which we have at lab times were not available at that time. So it was quite rewarding, I think, to go back to these old data and do alpha S analysis in the lab style in order to get a very low energy, results on alpha S. Now this is just a differential distribution of one of the observable, which is classically used in E plus E minus. That's a differential two-jet distribution, together with several models descriptions like PCR, Herwig, and JetSet. And this is done for center of mass energies of 14 GeV, of 22 GeV, 35 GeV, and 44 GeV. And there has never been alpha S analysis at the very low energies in those times because, as I remember, the data in those times were only badly described by the at that time existing next to leading order QCD and hadronization models. Only the new models which became fashionable and available at the time of lab managed to really describe these data on the spot, and this was quite nice to see because we took the lab tuning of these models without changing anything but the center of mass energy going back to this very low energy data, and they just fit perfect, almost perfect. So you see here, this is the residuals between data and Monte Carlo models. One can even discriminate a bit between different models, but in general, they do a pretty good job, especially at the higher energies. And these other plots with the yellow and red lines here, this is the hadronization correction factors which must be applied. And of course, hadronization factors get a bit larger at smaller energies, but one always finds large enough phase space in order to fit alpha S in regions where the corrections are small and very close to one. Now, doing this not only for one distribution, but as is classically done now in E plus E minus in quite a number of distributions, thrust and heavy jet masses and jet broadenings and the C parameter, and then this differential two jet distribution for these different energies at 14, 22, 40, 34, 35, 38, and almost 44 GeV. You see they are always compatible. One can form averages, which is these yellow bands. And already here you see by eye that alpha S is nicely running because alpha S changes and gets smaller at higher energies. Now this is a plot of of these results from JADE. As I said, there was never an alpha S determination so far at these low energies, no process. And here you have the lab data, and you see they smoothly describe the running alpha S quite nicely. I should say that there was also, just a couple of years ago, a pushback maybe, and a demonstration that the next to leading order without resummation actually is not so bad. If one does determinations of alpha S for different observables as a function of this scale parameter of the X mu, the scale, the factor between the renormalization scale and the physical energy scale. And there one sees the next leading order, of course, is typical behavior of a parabola, like dependence of alpha S from the scale. And one has certain minima here, which would be the Stevenson optimized scale. But also experimentally, one can distinguish and can optimize renormalization scales because the shape of the distribution changes. And this is a plot of the delta chi-square for these same observables. And you see huge dependencies of chi-square on changes of the renormalization scale. So for many of these observables, you get a very precise experimental optimization of the scale. And once one does this without using resummation, just pure next to leading order, Delphi, for instance, has shown in these plots that if one does alpha S determinations, all these different distributions and observables at scale center of mass energy, then you get quite inconsistent results. But if you do the same optimization using the experimental optimized scales, they all align and get a rather precise determination of alpha S. So that shows that resummation, of course, is something that I think is absolutely needed, but part of the resummation, I think you can also get by proper optimization of the scale. Okay, now then the question is, of course, how do you define the uncertainties? And that's an endless story, which hopefully will be solved now and in the near future. Let me show you again, just for one experiment for L3, this nice plot where they have these determinations of alpha S from event shapes using the resum calculations, and not only at MZ0 and above, but also below the Z0 peak taking radiative return events. And you see that although there one experiment, one gets a very nice consistent description. Now, combining all these countless publications of the lab experiments on alpha S measurements from shapes, what I present here is that I use my own combination, which is more explained in the last papers which are on the market. But what is soon to come and long awaited by many is that the lab QCD working group, which is working quite hard since many years, has now defined a new and standardized error treatment and also the definition of theoretical uncertainties. And you can see this proposal how to do that in this paper. Unfortunately, the paper which really gives the combined alpha S values from lab between all the experiments after all these years of work is still in the process, and we hope we get it within the next couple of, I don't know, months, hopefully. So what I show here are the lab 2 results on alpha S from the 4 experiments at the different, at the highest energies of lab 2, then my personally combined values, which then will go into the plot, which I showed you just in the beginning. All right, then coming to alpha S determinations from hadron colliders. I think the first one which would fit our minimal standards of today, namely being incomplete next to leading order, comes from 1991-92, where both UA1 and UA2 have measured and determined alpha S from W plus jet production, specifically from the ratio of W plus one jet over W with zero jet production. And this is a combined result, which, okay, has large, relatively large experimental, but also relatively large theoretical errors, usually, typically the scale uncertainties. But then, just in 1997, D0 published a new paper, I think, that has never made it into real publication. I only know the conference reports. Anyhow, taking this from the conference reports, one gets quite a different picture, namely that the QCD prediction is way off the data in this observable R, the ratio of W plus one jet over W plus zero jet, as a function of the jet ET. And at that time, it was impossible to get the QCD fit to the data. So from that time on, I think that measurement vanished from the usual world average determinations of alpha S. It has not been solved as far as I know so far. Okay, second point then was in 1996 when UR1 published alpha determination of alpha S from B cross sections. Now we heard about these pending or maybe already solved problems in the B production at hadron colliders. And they used a little different procedure in order somehow also fitting the ratio of three body to two body decays of the B, so gluon radiation from B. And this gave them, an alpha S measurement, which is already looks to the precision of nowadays next to leading order studies. Okay, then there was also a couple of years ago by UL6 an alpha S determination from formed photon production, basically the difference of these two processes, PP bar going to gamma X minus sigma cross section of PP going to gamma X. And from that, they determined also alpha S in next to leading order to quite a good precision. Now, then the most up-to-date determinations of alpha S from colliders come from a determination from an analysis of inclusive jet production at the Tevatron. Here is the latest results from CDF from 2002. And you see that the problem which we also discussed already at this workshop or where we presented, that this distribution of the this is not the distribution, this is already the strong coupling constant evaluated in bins of the transverse energy from these inclusive jet cross sections. And you see that at the end, at high N, high ET, there is, of course, this enhancement in the data, which was not predicted by the calculation in the structure functions. So if one analyzes alpha S and forms a common central value of alpha S at MZ, as CDF has done here, they restrict the data up to 250 GeV, and for the moment neglect the higher energy data. Coming up with quite a good result. Negligible statistical error, but quite a substantial experimental systematic uncertainty. And then, of course, the next to leading order higher order uncertainties, changing renormalization factorization scale. And then, of course, also some uncertainty from the particle density functions. Now, these are the four classes of hadron collider results in alpha S. And a few remarks from my personal point of view is that due to large experimental and also theoretical uncertainties, apparently these measurements from hadron colliders do not play a significant role in the current determination of the world average of alpha S, because they are limited to rather significant uncertainties of the next leading order QCD calculations coming from higher orders, but also I think being due to the matching with the experimental definition of the experimental jet algorithm, which is not quite straightforward. Of course, there are uncertainties from the structure functions. There is quite some uncertainties depending on the quality of the available Monte Carlos and hadronization models, which must be improved. This has been said many times already here, and which is the purpose also of this workshop. Then a big, which is strongly linked also to the quality of the Monte Carlos, the question of the underlying events and beam remnants, how much do they influence the results. But there are, of course, also experimental issues like the limited energy, knowledge of energy calibration and other things. So we need really improvements in this case of Hadron Collider results. And it was stressed by several speakers so far. Thomas Germann was just the last in the row, that apparently we need next to leading order QCD calculations or resummation, which helped a lot in the case of E plus E minus and should also help here. We need, of course, always improved parton distributions, which is always done by quite a number of people. We need alternative and improved tools like alternative JET algorithms, because I should just remind that in E plus E minus annihilation, we learned quite a lot of the theoretical uncertainties when we started to use several observables in parallel, because they all have different dependencies on the higher order corrections which are not known. We certainly need improved Monte Carlo models and hadronization models, especially taking care on the link of the perturbative and the non-perturbative part. And we need, I think, at some point also careful corrections for non-perturbative effects, which is usually not done in hadron collisions, which in E plus E minus was always some point of concern, namely for hadronization, and that remained constant and a viable problem also at the highest energy. So I think that is also an issue for the hadron colliders in order to aim at something which could be a parton level analysis. We need certainly more data statistics, and if we get data, then possibly with highest quality. And I think we also need more data at different energies, because there we also learn quite a lot on systematic uncertainties. Now, coming back to the summary plot, I did not go through all of these measurements and determinations. I did go through all the hadron collider data, but not the other things. And just saying a few words how I derive at this value of the central value, which is not difficult to do that, because there's not much freedom in getting out with the central value, but it's always the question, what do we design as the overall error? Now, the problem is that the error of most results, the errors are dominated by theoretical uncertainties, and they are, of course, correlated, maybe even largely correlated, and always or mostly to an unknown degree. There's no accepted unique definition of the theoretical uncertainty, so each collaboration, each group of people publishing a determination of alpha s uses slightly different definitions and ranges of their uncertainties, of their theoretical uncertainties. And so the question is how to estimate the overall uncertainty of this quite large amount of data. So I tried several definitions and treatments of the errors, which I will just quickly show. My favorite, and that of many people, is what we call optimized correlation, in that we assume an overall correlation factor between all these measurements, which we include in the final averaging procedure, such that the overall chi-square equals 1 per degree of freedom. So, but this is done on an overall basis, so we have no different correlation factors between different classes of calculations. There's just one correlation factor between all these measurements in order to bring chi-square to 1 degree of freedom. Of course, one can compare this with the error assuming all measurements being totally uncorrelated, which is the easiest way to take. And one can also compare to the simple RMS, which is an unweighted RMS of all results without looking at their errors, just the scattering of the central values. And something which I keep using since a couple of years, but only as a cross-check, defining that the error shape is not a Gaussian, but more a rectangular shape in these quotations of alpha s and their error, and summing this up and takes the overall width of the contribution, the distribution one gets. One can also get a number for the error. Okay, this is quite a complicated table, so I will try to get you through this. If I take all the data, which is 33 in this plot, which you saw in the table, 33 different values of alpha s at different energies. And I average them with all these four different possibilities, and the one with the correlated error, the one which puts the chi-square per degree of freedom, is given here in the first column, and that is the error I usually quote. Now, the central value taking all the 33 measurements is 0.1189. The correlated error is 0.0037. The correction factor, the correlation factor, which I need between all these measurements, which comes out to be 0.65. And that compares to the procedure if one takes all these errors uncorrelated, which gives, of course, a very tiny error, right? So this is certainly the lowest value one can ever get. This is a simple RMS, and this is a box RMS error. Now, we have nine out of the 33 measurements. We have now nine classes of measurements which are complete to next to leading order. And I think it is just prudent to take those in order to derive the world average. So if one takes all these nine, one gets a value which is quite close, only little change on the last digit, slightly smaller error, same correlation factor, and the other numbers compare accordingly. Then you will probably remember that Indurain's measurement of alpha s from the moments of structure functions had the smallest error of all of them, although I have multiplied it already by a factor of two. And so just checking what comes out when we leave out this one measurement from structure functions, going to eight measurements, so it brings up, so you see this F2 measurement from Indurain brings down the average by, yeah, something like one digit here from 0.1196 to 0.1183. Now, this correlated error measurement then is also sensitive to data which have large errors, which usually should not contribute so much, but this goes into the overall uncertainty. If one takes the six measurements out of the nine, which are really the most significant ones, which have errors in alpha s, total designed uncertainties of point smaller of 0.08, one gets this average at 0.0027 total uncertainty. Now, that is exactly the one which, since a couple of years, then I define as the current world average, at least in my attempts to do that. And so we derive, and this was taking the data at the end of 2002 at the value of alpha s 0.1183 plus minus 0.027. Now, one should say that a shift and an overall largely dominated, that the shift in the error is largely dominated by the Indurain result. If one takes that out, one gets slight changes, but still compatible, of course. There's nothing which is incompatible. And at the last point in this table, I just want to address the question, do deep inelastic scattering data and the plus or minus data who give the most significant results see differences? Now, if I take all the deep inelastic scattering data, I get an average of 0.1178. If I take out Indurain's result, it's 0.1192, and that is almost identical to the E plus E minus of 0.1194. So even if we take Indurain in, which we should do, and I did also for the final world average, there is no disagreement, no significant. There is a shift, a slight tendency, but there's no disagreement between deep inelastic scattering and E plus E minus. And now finally saying that I showed some of the most recent results, which then did not go into this analysis because I restrict the final world average to next to leading order. So there was no change since 2002. And so my conclusion would be that the same result then holds also for the year 2003. Okay, fine. So just the last point, and then I come to the conclusion. You have seen this nice, overall convincing running alpha s plot from a zillion of independent experimental measurements. Now, one could try to quantify the running of alpha s by the experimental signature for the running experiment. And by that, I attempt in these two slides, and the last two slides, to determine the beta zero, the zero coefficient of the beta function, and of the number of colors from the functional Q dependence seen in the data. For that, I don't take all of the data because this always gives complications because they are largely correlated. And I chose five measurements which are significant, which are spread over the entire energy range, and which should be largely uncorrelated in their uncertainties. That is from tau decays, from the moments of the F2 structure functions, from scaling violations in F3, and from the hadronic width of the zero. These are all next to leading order results. And then in order to also get the very high energies into this fitting procedure, I took the event shapes at the very highest energies from at LAP, which is of course not next to leading order, but it's a resummed next to leading order calculation, so it should be relatively reliable. And then I fit to these 5 points the following functional forms: an alpha S dependence, just like QCD gives it to us, like ln Q squared over, and there's a constant factor in the beginning, and this it should be Q squared over C squared, and C is something like the lambda value. I also fit these data to a straight line and to a functional form which says a constant over, so a 1 over Q dependence. And we will see the significance of the running. The first fit was, so to speak, the QCD fit. So for the B parameter and for the C parameter, I get these two values. Remember, this would be something like lambda in leading order QCD. And the chi-square is very good. It's 1 for 3 degrees of freedom. The probability is 85%. A linear dependence, energy dependence, which of course we have no theory for, but just to have it as a straw man, gives these parameters which have no physical meaning, but the chi-square is 130 over 3 degrees of freedom, which gives a probability of 10 to the minus 62. And this 1 over Q gives a certain parameterization, which has a probability of 14%, so that's smaller than the QCD, but cannot be entirely neglected. Now, taking the QCD fit, the B value of 1.64, and transferring this into the number of colors, by fixing the number of quarks, you get number of colors equals 3.0 plus minus 0.01. This 0.1, this gives kind of a measure for the significance of the degree of the running. It's quite perfect in agreement with the QCD. Okay, so I come to the conclusions. I think we have all seen that we have huge amounts of data available from different high energy processes in large ranges of energies in order where we have significant alpha S determinations. We have a very consistent behavior of the data. The running of alpha S as predicted by QCD is very convincingly proven. We have now 9 classes of measurements which are based on complete next to leading order QCD, which we can take to derive the current world average of this value. I should stress here that, of course, the results from next to leading order and also from the values from next to leading order are compatible, so there was no big difference in all these calculations, and that we cannot see any significant difference between deep inelastic scattering and E plus E minus results. The future can still bring quite some improvements. Since the errors are limited by, in most cases, not all, but in most cases, limited by theoretical uncertainties, we certainly need, at least for certain classes of processes, next to leading order calculations, possibly in deep inelastic scattering, that's well underway. For Hadron Collider jets, that seems also to be underway. And for E plus E minus jets and shapes, it would be nice to have them too. We need a consistent definition and treatment of the systematic uncertainties. At least lab people have started to have a new definition of this, and maybe this can develop into a sort of a standard. And we need, of course, also optimization of tools, high statistics, collider data at different energies, and all kinds of other things. So thank you very much.
About 2 years ago, there was, I think, from Aleph, a measurement of alpha S from four jet type event shape observables, which at that time had a rather outrageously small theoretical error. You did not really quote it in here. Is there a particular reason for it?
I did not show. I had to cut somewhere, right? Now, this is, of course, a nice analysis because it was the first time that from four-jet events it was possible to determine alpha S in next-to-leading-order QCD. Now, next-to-leading-order QCD in four-jets means order alpha S cubed. And these are the data, the points, and the fit range is defined here, and you see that QCD describes the data quite nicely. Now, one has a similar thing here. One has a very sharp chi-square distribution as a function, the chi-square as a function of the renormalization scale variation. And so one can define an experimentally optimized point here, which Aleph did. And there's quite some justice behind that, because the data are very nicely described. Then the scale uncertainty from this definition is rather small. That's the first factor that goes into the final result. Second factor is, and this is, of course, quite some criticism I had to the Aleph people, they have a very loose test of the hadronization uncertainties in their analysis. They just took two models and took the difference. Both models were optimized to the data, described the data quite nicely, so there was almost no hadronization uncertainty. That cannot be true. There is no such thing like zero hadronization uncertainty in E plus E minus, I think. So I took all of that result into the table. You may not have seen it. It's in the long table, right? I did not drop it, but I inflated all of the error by a factor of two. But it does not go into the final determination of the world average, because it's not a next to leading order calculation, right? But it's in the papers.
Guido. So if you take back your table of all the results in AlphaS, the famous plot with the data, the yellow band, the one which is your classic
figure. I think it was just in the beginning, right?
Yeah. In any case, there, the determination of alpha S from the inclusive Z0 decays, which I consider the cleanest determination of them all, is a little bit mistreated by you, I got the impression.
Sorry, which measurement again?
The determination of alpha S from the Z decays.
Yes.
Where is it there?
You mean this is the hadronic? This is the hadronic
decay. Yeah, this is, if I'm not wrong, is R.
This is R, yes.
Okay, but.
And only R, right?
There, I think you are a little bit unfair, because there are also the values of the hadronic peak cross section, the width of the Z.
Sure. Yes.
Okay. So you are taking R, which actually is the point, is the value which is a little bit mysterious, because from 20 years is always higher than it should, and has a large error. But if you take the determination of alpha S from all
right.
the totally inclusive measurements at the Z,
fits to the
you get the most precise and the cleanest of them all. So your table is another comment. Then you say you have 33 entries, but now it depends from the ideology of the author what is a good entry. For instance,
sure.
your E plus E minus formation can be immediately seen from the fact that you have 20 different jet shapes. Okay?
Yes. Okay. Can I start?
So, in other words, your presentation does not make a difference between the intrinsic quality of each particular source. So, this is a criticism.
Yes. I mean, it's not the first time this criticism is raised. Starting with your second comment first, I mean, it's true, the E plus E minus entries is outnumbering all the others here, because they are all at different energies. But you realize probably that not a single one of those goes into my world average determination. So this is just a demonstration for the running of alpha S as it has been determined by all these different measurements in a large energy range. But not a single one of those goes into the final determination of the world average, because it's not next to leading order, right? So they are for demonstration only. Of course, it's my personal choice to do so. I worked in E plus E minus. What else should I do, right? Your first comment on, and that also has been put forward quite a number of times, and you are perfectly right. I mean, taking just the value of R makes no justice to the, all these electroweak position measurements which we have, because that's much more than the hadronic width. And in the lab, overall electroweak fits, where they partly also use collider data and all kinds of things, but also do it only for a plus and minus, you get also value of alpha s, which is smaller in size. That's true. It's 0.118, I think, if I remember right. And the experimental uncertainty is much reduced because much more information goes into this giant fit. However, nobody has ever done a careful theoretical uncertainty calculations on that, because you use a large amount of different observables. They all have different higher order uncertainties, and okay, it's... Yeah, you can also do. Yeah. No, but if you look into the lab publications, there's never a theoretical uncertainty given for that determination of alpha s from the overall fit. No QCD uncertainty, because it is, of course, a matter of definition how to calculate that. It has never been done reliably to my mind from lab. You don't find this number in the publications. That is the reason why I then, because I thought it's not so important. We have, the most important thing is to take a multitude of measurements from different experiments, processes, and energies, and not so much to look at each single measurement that you get the smallest error out of that, because this may be misleading in the end. So I took this very obvious one, which you can calculate using your pocket calculator, and where we have some measurements of the theoretical uncertainty in next to leading order, including the scheme uncertainty. Nobody has looked at that in the overall electroweak fit. Right? This is my personal choice of, I just want to explain. It may be wrong, right? But this is the reason, right? Gladly.
Yeah, I have two comments on the analyzation error for the flow jet rate measurement.
Yes.
The first one is the method applied is practically exactly the same method as has been done for the event shapes. I mean, difference is taking different Monte Carlo models. There's nothing particular here, so it's the same method. The second point is what one should remember is the quadratic dependence on alpha, because for the event shapes, there's a linear dependence in alpha s. So the difference in the models goes directly in alpha
very,
s.
Very sensitive.
And now, because of the quadratic dependence, a difference in the models enters only somehow 50% in the relative error. And this had somehow impact in the final error. That's why it came out surprisingly small.
Yeah, the hadronization error, I think there are better possibilities now and are used by some of the experiments than just taking two models. I mean, for each model, we talked about this in the previous talk, we have a determination of all these non-perturbative and stupid parameters, right? Those, of course, also have uncertainties out of the experimental uncertainty procedure. So it would be prudent, I think, for such a thing where you have such small errors to show that even if you change these hadronization uncertainties in the limits of the errors which you have and see the change, it may be as small, but you should show it, I think. That would be my comment on this. But if it's true, it would be nice, of course, having such a determination with these very small errors. I would be the last to not take it, but we must be convinced. This is QCD. I mean, QCD has always shown us that the uncertainties are mostly bigger than we thought in the beginning.
Any other questions? Well, if not, it's time for lunch. Let's take some